Are you sitting comfortably? Then we'll begin.
Listen with other, because grown-ups need story time too. Tomorrow Never Knows by Giles Booth, Episode 6, The Network. Peggy was half right. They didn't shoot me, but I did get in more trouble the second time I tried to escape. I guess we both did, Roland and I. When I woke up in the boat, I roused him with difficulty. It was freezing cold. Snow was starting to fall. My watch said it was almost 9 a.m. We got out of the boat and were starting to carry it back to the shed, and we almost made it. We just crossed the coastal road when a passing AP jeep spotted us. We tried to run, but they soon caught up with us. We would have kept running, but they had guns. Roland looked absolutely terrified as they escorted us back to HQ, but we said nothing to each other. When we got inside, they gave us blankets and split us up. I was questioned by a female AP officer I'd not seen before. She was tall, her long dark hair tied back in a ponytail. She terrified me.
"What were you doing in that boat?"
I saw no point in lying. "I was trying to escape."
"The Betty boy, he put you up to this, right?"
No, it was my idea."
"Where did you get the boat?"
I thought about the pile of computers in Roland's father's shed. "We just found it."
"Where?"
"Washed up on the beach."
"I don't believe you. Whose boat is it? Mr. Betty's?"
"No, I have no idea."
"If you try and escape one more time, young lady, there will be severe consequences for you, for your friends and your family. Do you understand?"
I started to cry.
"In the meantime, I'm placing you under house arrest."
The officer stood up and knocked on the door and left. The female guard who'd fed me tea and biscuits last time came in and sat with me. This time she had a cup of instant tomato soup. It smelled disgusting, but at least it was warm. She held my hand and gave me her handkerchief. My bedroom really was my prison cell now. I was not permitted to leave the castle at all except for one 20-minute walk round the castle at 10 o'clock every morning with an AP guard escorting me. I've no idea what happened to Roland, but Mrs. Betty didn't come to cook and clean anymore. My grandfather bought cold food and supplies from HQ and we cooked simple meals as best we could. Schoolwork was dropped off in a basket at the door in the morning and collected in the evening. Miss Henfrey continued to set and mark my work, but I never saw her. I considered trying to send her a message asking about Roland in my school books, but I didn't know if I could trust her, and even if I did, I didn't want to get anyone else into trouble. I never saw anyone else except Grandad and the changing roster of half a dozen AP guards who came to the house. Grandad hardly spoke to me except to discuss what we were having for supper. He disappeared either to HQ or into the cellar every morning, leaving me alone with an armed guard outside the door until he returned for lunch, which was always a cheese sandwich and an apple. I'd run out of novels, so I started reading some of Grandad's old history books. I read about the Battle of Hastings and the Wars of the Roses. The most modern books were on World War II, but nothing went past 1945. Even some of the books about the war had pages ripped out. What could have happened so long ago that we were forbidden to know about? And where were the history books about the Troubles? Was anyone writing those? When I got bored reading ancient history, I listened to the wireless. Just soft, soppy music, mostly. Much less chat than normal. with occasional news bulletins about the upcoming vote in the General Assembly. I wish we had a record player in the castle. I was surprised Grandad didn't have one, being an important person. I would have loved to have had some choice about what music I listened to. Being under house arrest meant I had a lot of time to think. It was probably my overactive imagination compensating for the lack of stories to read, but I became convinced that Roland's father had been trying to help me. I decided he knew the boat was there, and he deliberately got Roland to go on a spurious errand to get oil, hoping that he'd find it and help me escape. And then there was a pile of computers in the shed. Could that be what Grandad was talking about in the cellar when he told someone to keep your hoard of gear safe? Maybe Grandad was talking to Roland's dad. They were both trying to make life better for everyone, to make us more free to use the old technology. On the day of the vote, Grandad told me he'd be out all day and wouldn't be back for lunch. The guards hardly ever came inside except to use the toilet, and I decided to use this extra time on my own to have another look in the cellar room with the strange machines. I felt I had nothing to lose, so with more confidence than before, I opened the cellar door, went down, and entered the code to open the machine room. It was just how I remembered it. I turned on the strange electric picture frame next to the typewriter keyboard. This time, though, the words were different. Before, it had shown green letters warning about death and something about a username. This time, it said, "Username, Commodore. Location, island.menu. Options, 1, mail. 2, connect. 3, links. 4, FTP. 5, graffiti." I wondered if Grandad's username was Commodore and he'd been using the machine just before he went out. I pressed the number 1 on the typewriter. Nothing happened. I looked around the keys and saw one was labelled Enter. I pressed it. A list of what looked like message titles appeared.
island.mail.commodore.inbox 1. Vote day. Protocol information. 2. Island staff rotors December. 3. Oxford visit inquiry. 4. Confidential. Kim Pride. 5. Off-island leave pass. Declined.
Kim Pride was my name. After an agonising wait, terrified about what I might discover, I pressed the number 4 key and then Enter.
Title, confidential, Kim Pride. Message, your granddaughter Kim Pride has made another attempt to escape from the island. She was aided by Roland Betty. She will now be kept under house arrest under your supervision and that of AP guards who will be posted outside the castle at all times. She is to have no contact with any other islanders, and Mrs. Betty will no longer be working for you. You may collect basic rations from HQ. Any failure to comply with this or attempts to communicate with your son-in-law or any members of the DOA will result in revocation of all remaining privileges, imprisonment, and possible execution by firing squad at the discretion of the elders. If you are found to be concealing any information about the whereabouts of your daughter or other members of the DOA, this will result in the immediate execution of your granddaughter without any due process. Signed, the Elders of the Church of the Sacred Analog, this day, 8th of December, Year of Our Lord, 2055.
I felt sick. I didn't know what to do next. I was torn between smashing up everything in the room, going back to my room and locking myself in, or just running down the causeway towards the mainland and letting the snipers kill me. I didn't know which was more terrible. The idea that my mother might still be alive and everyone had been lying to me, that she was a terrorist, or that they would actually execute me in cold blood if my granddad knew where she was and was found to be hiding it. I breathed deeply, trying to calm down. I needed to be careful, cover my tracks to avoid anyone being shot, either granddad or me. I couldn't leave the machine like this. I needed to get it back to the way it was. At the bottom of the frame, it said X, exit. So I pressed the X and enter keys on the typewriter. It went back to the list of messages. I pressed X and enter again. The original list of options I'd seen reappeared. I turned the frame off, went in the kitchen, poured myself a glass of water and sat down. Grandad had only been gone 45 minutes by this time. He wouldn't be home for hours. I paced up and down, turned the radio on, cheerful pop music, nothing about the vote. I turned it off. If Grandad was hiding something about my mother, I felt sure it must be in the castle somewhere. I went upstairs. His bedroom was just as it had been before, but the books on his bedside table had changed. I tried his study door. He must have forgotten to lock it. I'd never been in there on my own before. I had a thrill of forbidden fruit as I browsed the spines of the hundreds of books that lined the walls. I picked out one by an author I liked, then realised if I took it, he'd know I'd been in there, which was strictly forbidden without him. I put it back and looked around the rest of the room. Its small leaded windows had a view over towards the mainland. Beneath the window, there was a wooden writing table with a small drawer. It was locked. Where would he keep the key, I wondered. I scanned the bookshelves again. On the top shelf, I spotted the strange book that had been on his bedside table the previous time. Programming the 6502. I couldn't reach it, so I pulled a chair over. As I pulled the book off the shelf, a small key balanced on top fell on the floor. I picked it up. It opened the drawer. Inside there were lots of old letters, papers and photographs. Inside a thick, creamy envelope, I found a wedding certificate. Ada Jones and Stuart Pride. Stuart Pride was my father. I'd always been told my mother's name was Mary, but this said that 20 years ago, he'd been married to someone with the same name as the one written inside the copy of the Railway Children he'd given me on the day I came to the island. Beneath the certificate, there was a faded old wedding photograph. I felt dizzy. I heard Grandad calling my name from downstairs, getting closer.
Kim, I have some news.
I didn't bother to hide or move. I let him find me. He burst into the room.
Kimberly!
I held up the wedding photograph. A photograph of my father and Miss Stranks. That was the final part of Tomorrow Never Knows. It was written, read and mixed by Giles Booth. Original music is by Lee Sperry. Listen With Other is a GSB Radio Enterprises production. Epilogue. I started writing Tomorrow Never Knows as a piece of young adult fiction in the 2010s, maybe a bit earlier. I set it in an unimaginably far-off future date, 2025. It was inspired mainly, I think, by Brexit. I imagined an England that had become ever more backwards and inward-looking. If everyone loved the World War II spirit so much, what if all of society was taken back to the 1940s? I never managed to finish the story as a novel for young adults, but recently, when I was looking for ideas for this podcast, I looked again at what I'd written, and it struck me that the rise and backlash against generative AI in the intervening years and the current wars in Europe and the Middle East made the story even more relevant, maybe plausible. My thanks to Lee Sperry for writing the theme music that inspired me to rewrite and expand the story a third time, and indeed finish it. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please do review, like, subscribe and share. Listen With Other carries no advertising, has no extra paid for content. It's a labour of love.